All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, who is ready to talk about referral roadmap today? Oh, just me? Okay. All right. Come on. Did I?
Yes.
Yes. Whoop, whoop. Thank you so much. Referrals really are a huge part of many of your practices. The research and the study data all says that referrals are still the most significant source of new business. And we also see that those trends are shifting with digital marketing, podcasts, blogs, emails, et cetera. And referrals are something that naturally occur or should occur in your practice. And so today, what we really want to talk about is not creating referrals. We will talk about that later in the year at the growth retreat. We also have Carl Richards has given his client referral sessions, module 1 and 2 in depth. So if you're ready to drive into creating more referrals from clients and or centers of influence, there are recorded lessons in the library that you are welcome to attack if that fits into your business plan and your quarterly priorities. Today, what I want to talk to you about is something that I'm willing to bet no one has ever talked to you about. It is one of these little things that we try to layer into the agenda because you all know there's already a ton in it. And so every couple of years, we pull out these sessions that feel really timely. And referral roadmaps is one of those sessions. The referral roadmap session isn't about generating more referrals at the start of the cycle. It is very much a session about what to do and why you do it when you receive a referral so that you can create a much steadier, higher quality, higher volume of ideal referrals in your practice. Is everybody on board with that idea? Does anybody not want to do that? Of course not, right? It's the low-lying fruit. There are people that you're already adding value to, whether they're your clients or your centers of influence. Those relationships are established, the trust equity is there. And the question is, when they act on it, what do you do about it? So most of the conversations that we have or that I have around referrals, if we're being incredibly honest, have some version of referrals aren't magic, but they can be scary, which is when we ask about them, when we talk about them, right? We don't, as we've talked about, we don't want to feel like the schmucky salesperson. We don't want to seem needy. And so again, there are quality, dignified ways to do that in ways that very much align with your brand and your goals that you should feel confident to communicate to clients, centers of influence in the world at large. But this conversation is about how you manage referrals so that people enjoy making them and you get to a place where it's a momentum that works for you, like the phone just rings and the referrals are there. Service is, of course, a way that we create that environment. And it really bears a conversation about why advisors don't get more referrals in the first place. And so what are those reasons? As we've talked about, when we think about clarity of the business model and the client base, we get so general and unclear about who to refer, just more people. We don't have that specific niche or that client, or we haven't really communicated it clearly to our clients, whether it's general or specific. And so what we're really doing is leaving it on them to figure out how to talk about us and tell our story, which is a huge psychological and behavioral hurdle, which we, again, talk a lot more about in the generating client referrals lessons. It's also a function of you're hunting, not farming. And what we mean by that is you're not seeding and nurturing and building that trust equity that creates those pipelines of referrals. You're showing up, telling the story, and then expecting the result and moving on. And so what we're going to talk about is really building a back-end process that makes sure that you're not the advisor that does that. This will set you apart from every other advisor that a client or center of influence has ever referred to, because you're going to understand not just the methods of referrals, but the meaning behind them and how to create a process that accounts for both of those things. So another reason that we don't get referrals, and this is really what we're talking about, are the next three bullets, is that we have a fundamental failure to recognize, reinforce, and reciprocate when it comes to referrals. We don't create an experience and an environment that reinforces people's desire to continue to make those referrals. We're going to talk a lot more about that, but I want to seed that idea with you. Next, clients aren't invested in the outcome. And what I mean by that is that they are just doing a task versus really engaging in a relationship around referrals. So we're going to dive into what that trust, equity, and relationship is really like with clients and centers of influence and how to actually get them invested in the outcome so they want the referral to succeed. And last but not least, we don't create an experience that's worth it. So we're going to really dive into the behavioral and the mindset piece of the psychology of referrals and why people do and don't refer. And oh, this is the best part. Why would a client or a center of influence, magic question of the day, refer once, but never again? So we're going to make this the interactive part. If anybody had to guess, why would that be? Julie, are they completely out of people? Like they found one person on the planet that might need your services and that was it, no more.
No, they had a bad experience, most likely.
Or I'll just even go with this. This is going to blow your mind. How about just a neutral experience? So we're going to talk about how neutral is a no-no. Woo, double like, do not do that. You know how I'm always saying, just don't do that. Do not do neutral when it comes to referrals. So I'm going to explain to you why that is so important. And we're going to talk about the process that covers all of those bases in a simple, easy way. And then if you just follow either three or five simple steps, you will nail this referral thing every single time and get a higher quality and quantity of ideal client referrals. Is anybody interested in that? Right? No external marketing, no extra time, no extra budgeting. Just don't mess it up when someone makes a referral is what it boils down to. And if we're being really candid in our conversation, that's what's happening in most advisory firms, is that when someone actually engages in the act of making a referral, we mess it up. Now, hopefully I've piqued your curiosity because you're good people. And I know that you're like, what is she talking about? I don't think I'm messing it up. So we're going to break down the opportunity cost of the way that most advisors handle referrals. And so the grounding we want to start with is, why do people actually refer? Michael, do you believe that someone is referring to you because you're a great guy and they want to help you out?
No.
Nope. That is the honest and truthful answer. It's accurate, by the way. Terry, do you think that they're like, oh, I love these people. I want to help them so much. I've got to refer them to Terry.
No, I think what it is that a lot of people like to be seen as a resource, and they feel that if they have a quality person, there's kind of two parts to it. Number one, they want to seem like a resource. But number two, if it's somebody that they really love or someone they're very close to, they want to keep them out of the weeds.
Absolutely. So when you think about why people refer, the vast majority of the time, it's not to help you. It's not even to help their friend, family, or colleague. It's to help themselves. And I don't mean that from a selfish perspective. I mean it through the lens of psychology, human behavior, and mindset. Britton, do you like to feel good or do you like to feel bad if you get to choose?
I'm trying to come up with a clever answer, but I'll just stick with feeling good is generally better than feeling bad.
Yeah, good is way better than feeling bad. So is Britain the exception, or is that pretty much every human being on the planet? Right. And what makes people feel good is the it's the conversation behind the conversation. And what makes people feel good when they're making a referral is a sense of value. How many of you have ever gone to a great restaurant or seen a great movie and then run out and told the people closest to you? Right? I do it all the time. How many of you, if we're being honest, had that person say to you, oh, I need a new restaurant. I need a new movie. I'm bored on Friday night. We related, connected, had some experience that we felt compelled to share for whatever sense of validation, reason, whatever. But we probably, if we're honest, didn't scroll and go, who are all the friends that we have that we need to make sure are aware of this new and cool restaurant option? It's not how it works. We're just talking to someone and we're like, ooh, hey. And so understanding that people like to share positive experiences. Why? When you buy a new car, what do you see everywhere? Andrew, when you bought your new car or your new used car, did you not like suddenly see that car like all the time?
Yeah, you do.
And why do you think that is, if you had to guess?
Go deep here, but I don't know, some sort of confirmation.
Absolutely, right? Your brain, one, it's relevant now in a way that it wasn't before. And two, when we make a buying decision, our brain is always looking for reasons to validate it or challenge it, right? Buyer's remorse is a really, really. So when we want to validate a decision, we're like, ooh, look, all of them, look everywhere. People drive this car. When we have a great restaurant experience, when we have a great advice experience, we want to share it with people because it validates our decisions. It validates our emotions. It validates our experience. If we're fighting with our spouse in Andrew's office and Andrew's still like, hey, let's find a way through this. It validates our feelings that we were right and that we needed to create this plan. It validates so much. And people don't realize when they make a referral that that's what they're sharing with you, but they're sharing that positive experience, which means that people are driven by positive feel-good experiences. Can we all agree on that? And that people seek to avoid bad experiences. And that would suggest that if we have to manage our limited energy, how much time are we going to invest in neutral experiences, Andrew?
Much less.
Much less, because there's no reward. Like, it's better than a bad consequence. We'll choose that every time. But when it comes to investing time, energy, and effort, that's not where we're going to start. So as we think about referrals, the first and most important conversation is really to talk about the behavior problem. And here's the behavior problem. How many of you have kids or grandkids and have gone through the potty training experience? Join me on, yes, this is so much fun. I consider myself a relatively intelligent, logical, rational, mature woman. And do you know what happened at the age of 34 was when I had my first child? So call it 36-ish when I'm potty training Parker. What happened when he went potty in the big boy potty for the very first time? What did I do?
You jumped up and down like a rock star.
Mind. I was like, oh my God, good boy. I'm so proud of you, right? Like the whole deal. And I did that for a few more times. Why? You all did it with me, by the way. I know I'm not the only one, right? Intelligent, rational adults become goobers. Like, why? Someone help me out here. Why do we do that?
You want them to do it again.
We want them to do it again. And so what are you creating?
Positive reinforcement.
Positive experience.
Positive experience. And if I know, and my brain knows that when I sit down on that potty and I do the thing and I hit the Cheerio, that's what we did at our house. It worked, by the way, 3 days. I got the high five and the M&M. Guess what? My brain, man, our brains love reward system. And so when you think about referrals, this is the really interesting part when it comes to referrals. What happens? In 98% of practices, I know because I did research on this before I retired to Costa Rica, it was 97%. What happens when the average advisor, you are not average, by the way, but when the average advisor gets a referral, what happens?
They don't thank the referrer.
Yeah. A huge majority of them don't do anything. Nothing. Radio silence. Now, there is a percentage, about 23, 27%, good, you know, call it a fourth, that do something. Call it a fourth to a third. What do they do? What's pretty common?
Thank the referrer.
Right. What am I going to write?
Thank you for sending John Jones to my practice.
Write a note, or in today's modern world, very often, it's an email. Right. And I'm going to thank them for that referral. Mm-hmm. So Andrew's going to make that referral and he's going to get a note that says, Andrew, thanks so much for the referral. I really appreciate it, Mary. And Andrew's like, cool. And then Andrew goes about his day. And then how does Andrew's brain file that away?
Neutral.
Neutral.
Yeah, neutral,
right?
Or
maybe like maybe a little bit warm and positive, like, right, hey, there, you know, chivalry's not dead, right? Some etiquette still exists. Great, thank you for the note.
Yeah, that is true. In this day and age, even a response is pretty good.
Yes, like an actual response, according to my research, is amazing. And imagine if you understood how to respond in a way that met people's needs at a human level, to be seen, to be acknowledged, to be validated, to feel good. And to pursue things that created those experiences, because that's how we're hardwired. Right? When I go to a great restaurant and it goes great and I tell somebody and they tell me it was a great experience, what am I very likely to do within the next 24 to 36 hours, according to the research?
Tell back to the restaurant.
And I'm going to tell somebody else because I want to, right? It's my little dopamine hit. I want to feel good. It's not so much that I'm concerned about what my friends are eating on Thursday night. It's that when they go to that restaurant and they have that experience, right? High five. Like, there's that self-validation piece. So understand that there's just this psychology that underpins referrals. So it's really important to understand the following. When someone makes a referral, whether they're a client or a center of influence or your dry cleaner, they are engaging in the most significant, the single most significant act of trust and confidence that they can place in you. There's nothing that comes with a higher trust quotient. Nothing. They've already given you their money. That was step one, right? Step two is referring other people into that experience, which candidly is riskier, right? Anyone who's ever worked with COIs understand they don't just open the floodgates and send you all their clients because you haven't established that trust equity. Right? Clients refer when they have an experience they want to share, and or when you create such a positive experience and story around it that you are reinforcing and increasing the probability that they engage in that behavior again and again. That's the job, to acknowledge and affirm the behavior in a way that someone goes at behind the curtain level, that felt great. I'm going to be looking for reasons to do that again. Now, you showing up and delivering the quality of advice and service that creates the experience on the other side is important for clients to be in that space. So that's step one. But when you think about referrals and the number of referrals, so ask yourself right now, what percentage of your new business is coming from client or center of influence referrals? And then based on the number of clients you have, what percentage of clients are actively referring? And centers of influence. Do you have that information? So it's good to have that information, because when you understand that you own 75% of referral behavior, it will fundamentally shift the way that you manage referrals. So again, we can talk about telling and seeding the story on the front end with clients and centers of influence, and we cover that in other lessons. What I really want to cover is what no one talks about, which is what happens when someone makes a referral, which is where we're dropping the ball the vast majority of the time. So all that effort to get people to refer falls short 70 to 80% of the time, which means that we have to do more work to create those referrals so that we can drop the ball more, so we can go out and create more work. So can we agree that if we could get better at managing the referral experience, we'd probably get a higher quality and a higher quantity of referrals that meet our profile, and that when we manage it in a good way, would just consistently reinforce and build on itself. And that would be really nice momentum that we could pick up for a growth engine that didn't require a huge pulling of the lever. Can we just agree on that conceptually? Great. So here's what you ultimately want to do. Here are the basics. You want to recognize the referral. You want to reward the referral, not with money, by the way. And you want to reinforce the referral behavior, the act of trust equity. Because isn't that significant when someone says thank you in a note? So Andrew, if I were potty training Parker and I had said, dear Parker, thanks for pottying in the big boy potty. Really appreciate it. XOXO mom. Would I have gotten the behavior that I wanted the next couple of hours?
No, it sounds pretty mundane. Doesn't sound very
Right, doesn't stick out to a three-year-old, right? But if I was like, oh my God, Margaret, this is amazing. It's the best thing I ever did. You're amazing. Of course, his brain's like, ding, 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 give me more of that. That's the experience I want you to create when someone refers to you, because do not forget, it is the single biggest act of confidence that they can place in you. They're saying, I trust you with this person and all their money. And I know that if you mess up, it reflects poorly on me. And I still trust you. There's nothing bigger than that. And most of the time, we don't even do them the courtesy of a thank you, or we do a passe thank you. We really don't recognize the value of the referral and then build a process around that. So we want to give a sincere and personal thank you. We're going to talk through the steps of that in just a minute. So you're going to get more detailed in your notes. So hold on just 1 second. Right, I see you all rapidly writing down. You're going to acknowledge the act and what it actually means beyond the surface stuff. And that's where you build trust equity faster in those relationships. You're going to create a collaboration. When we play the game together, do we want to win? Right, no matter what, Andrew? Like, yeah. If you're playing and I'm not playing, I don't care as much. So that's the goal, right? We want to get them on our team when it comes to getting that referral down the field to the result. The result is not always a yes, by the way. So don't make that mistake. The result is a quality outcome. So we'll talk about what that is. And that means that you essentially want to recognize this is going to be a huge shift for a lot of you. I want you to shift to, I'm not going to reward the result. I don't care if they say no, I'm not going to work with Andrew. I want you to recognize that the value is in the referral, because what you get is that it's the act of confidence in making the referral that matters to getting more referrals. And if I get the client and I don't make it a fun experience, or fun's not the right word, that positive experience, I may or may not get another one. So here's the follow-up exercise that will tell you if you suffer from this in any way, shape, or form. Post-call, your job is to go run a list of client and center of influence referrals for as far back as you can reasonably do that without a ton of effort. If you have to do it manually, go back a couple of years. Unless you're getting massive referrals, it's not too hard a task. And then ask yourself the power question. How many times have they referred? If someone referred once, unless they're a hermit, it implies that either A, they don't know anyone else, or they're a hermit. Or B, Andrew, I'm just going to use you as our example today, then Andrew just didn't do a good enough job of making it a memorable, sticky enough experience that their brain wanted to bother to do it again. And so they're just not going to go out of their way next time, because it's really all about how I feel about it in the end. Andrew didn't make me feel great about it. I'm a busy person. It's just not going to rise to the surface. You're not going to get eye level cereal shelf placement, Andrew. You're going to get bottom shelf far right. And if someone says, Andrew, you know, Bob, who's your financial advisor? They'll be like, Andrew. But if you do it right and you get cereal shelf placement, right eye level, they're going to be looking for opportunities to make referrals. And that's the shift. So you want to get them on the team as you go through that process. So here is the process. Everybody ready? So I'm going to go through centers of influence because it's a deeper process. The reason that it's a deeper process is, given the center of influence advisor relate, the right, the partner relationship, you can talk client specifics. In the case of a client referral, you're obviously not going to divulge personal information, motivators, et cetera. That would be very inappropriate. So I'm going to go through the five-step process because it's the most in-depth and it really explains all the psychology and the behavior, and then we'll talk through how to skinny it down for clients. So hopefully you can kind of get the idea from the details on the slide, but step one is recognition. Angela, when someone engages in the single biggest act of trust and confidence that they can place in me, what is the first, most important, and almost immediate underscore thing that I should do?
Well, you should reach out and thank them, at least.
Acknowledge, just acknowledge, right? That is planting an anchor in their brain. To Andrew's point, 75% of people don't even do that. Just don't even acknowledge the referral. And then we wonder why. I went to lunch and he made a referral. He said he was, and then nothing else happened. Well, why would it happen? Right? It's on us to create a value proposition that's so compelling. People want to tell the story for us. And I say this with love and respect. It's not that hard. So step one, acknowledge the referral. By telephone, I'm old school, ladies and gentlemen, email will fall into place. You're going to get a voicemail 98% of the time. I know, I still don't care. There's power in hearing the human voice. And I want Andrew to, in his way, shape, or form, say from a place of authenticity, I am touched by your confidence. I appreciate the referral. I will give it my immediate attention and I will keep you posted. I want you to be really clear. Those are super intentional talking points. Not concerned about the words, Andrew, whatever you want. But when I say, I'm touched by your confidence. Thanks so much for referring Bob and Jane. I really appreciate it and I'm touched by your confidence. Is that different than thank you? I am deeply seeing you have a lot of confidence in me. I appreciate that. I'm reinforcing that trust equity. I'm making some assumptions there, but given that they've just referred someone, it's a fair assumption. Acknowledge it. The sooner you acknowledge that trust equity connection, the faster and deeper it will grow. People love that. How many times have you made a referral and gotten that level of acknowledgement? Hey, Andrew, I really appreciate the referral. I know you're busy. I know there are a lot of people you could refer to. I really appreciate the trust and confidence that you place in me every time that you send someone to talk to me. I would like that kind of professional partner, please. No one complains to me about advisors that call them and talk to them in that way. Two, I also said, I will give it my immediate attention. What am I implying there?
That's important.
It's important. And if it's important, what does that mean about them and our relationship?
That's important too.
It's important. You are important to me. You're a priority. And if your client calls me spot on, I'm on it. You're important, Britain. Man, thank you. Trust, confidence. I'm dropping everything when your referral calls. Now, we all know you're going to have a great process for that. You can get right. You're not going to just be sitting there waiting, but you're going to have that process in place. That says, it's important to me, which means you're important to me. And no one I've met has ever complained about being made to feel important. Ever, never happened. Right. So now I'm acknowledging trust equity. I'm communicating validation and importance. I've only said two things, by the way, and I've now separated myself from 99% of advisors on the planet. I'm still on step one. Three, I will be sure to keep you posted. Nick, what does that imply?
That you're going to follow up with the referral and with the referrer.
Yeah, and why would I even care to do that?
So that they know that you did what you said you were going to do.
Because they're important, right? It's their client. And yes, I want to demonstrate my professionalism, but none of that matters until they think I know that it's their client. It's your client. We're on the same team. Appreciate that you put me on the team. Your client. Now, my job is to help you understand how we get the team down the field. Let's get an agreement on that. Some good stuff's going to happen. Now, in all this, I'm assuming the client or the prospect is a fit. Well, we've talked about, and we can talk about if they're not, but the idea is you want to say, I appreciate your trust and confidence. I will give it my immediate attention and I will keep you posted. Julie, drop a little voicemail. Jane, really appreciate the referral. I haven't had a chance to connect with Susan and her husband yet, but I just want you to know that I always know, you know, I always know that you send people when there's a real need. And I appreciate that and the confidence that you place in me every time you make a referral. I look forward to talking with them. I'm going to give them my immediate attention and I will be sure to keep you posted. So expect to hear from me as always, you know, tomorrow, you know, as soon as I know something, blah, blah, blah. How's Julie's referral source, whether it's a client or a center of influence in this case, how are they going to feel? Acknowledged, validated, maybe even a little special and important, like who's done this for them lately? And we're on step one. All right, so those are really, that's one phone call. Then in the ideal world, you're gonna add a little email affirming that. Hey, Bob left you a message. Just wanna confirm, right? We'll be talking to Bob and Jane. As always, we'll keep you posted. Give it my attention, keep you posted, right? So appreciate so much, blah, blah, blah. Step two, I call this enhancement. You can call it whatever you want. What we're doing now is we're going deeper into that trust equity. We're delivering on the promise that we made that they're important and we'll keep them involved. Because if you didn't notice, that's what you said in step one. You're important and I will keep you involved, which is my proof point that says you're actually important. Because if I don't involve you, like a lot of advisors, then it's just talk. Step two is super easy. It requires almost nothing. You're going to talk to the prospect. You're going to have the conversation and then you're going to CC on them on it. So if Andrew has the conversation with the client or the potential client and they say, great, I'd like to schedule a meeting, and Andrew has that email confirmation, he's going to CC their accountant, estate planning attorney, whomever on it. So that person knows. In an ideal world, if you're sending paper, I love to still send a mail copy. There's something really tactile and nice about getting something in on paper and written. And then you're going to write a handwritten note. Bob, right? Looking forward to meeting Jack and Jane. You're right. They had some great issues. Look forward to circling back with you. As always, appreciate the confidence, Andrew, right? Quick little chicken scratch note. Send it off. In the absence of that, CC Bob on the email and then forward the email, Andrew, from you with a note that says the same thing. I'm still a fan of paper in these kinds of instances for a period of time, which we'll talk about, because at some point they're going to tell you you don't need to do it anymore because they're going to be so clear on the awesomeness that happens every single time. They're going to skip to square one, tell you everything and say, high five, just take care of my people. And when they tell you that, then it's okay to skip the steps, not 1 second before. All right, so you're going to do the CC, which again is thanking them for referrals. So you're simply reinforcing the messages. Nothing new here. Step three, really easy. You're going to let them participate. So you're going to have a client meeting, right? And so participation is, Britton, when you go to meet with that client, would it be really awesome to know what the conversation was around planning or investing, how it came up, who wears the pants in the family, what they agree on, what their tax situation is, whether they have a lot of cash or investments or another, would it be nice to know those things?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not absolutely. Just for my benefit, but you know, if I say, oh, by the way, I have a feeling you might be interested in XYZ, so that the client already, you know, feels special because you already know something about them.
That's, yeah, so there's no downside to having information on the client from one, delivering value to the prospect, which we talk a ton about in the prospect process. So if you take that step to call the client or the center of influence, again, noting you can go deeper with the center of influence than with the client, just given the nature of that relationship, you can still make that connection, which is particularly with the center of influence relationship, Andrew, right, or Britton or Angela, you're going to reach out to that center of influence and you're going to ask for another good old fashioned phone call, have a human interaction that says, I would love to chat with you for a couple minutes, talk about John and Mary and kind of their motivation for planning and your reason for the referral. You know them, right? You have a history with them. I absolutely trust that, right? You, that the issue came up and that you raised it because it's important. I'd love to get your insights and any information you can share about what's important to them, the issues they're facing, any insights or recommendations that you might have as I go into that meeting. What am I just saying in seven different ways? Any wild guesses?
You value their input and their take on the situation.
Your input matters. This is not me going like, I'm so awesome. Thank you for the referral. I'm going to close the curtain and you're never going to hear from me again. This is me openly engaging with you and saying, thank you. I appreciate the trust and confidence. In order to serve this person or persons and our relationship best, I'd love some more insight and information because I value that from you. Use your words, use your style, say that message. No one in 28, I don't know, I have to guess. Basically, let's round up to 30. I'm almost 50. No one has ever said, no, I don't want to talk to you about the referral I made, Andrew. Just take them. The only time that ever happens, I gave you that footnote earlier, is when, right, I've gone through this process with Britton three times and I know how awesome he is and I know I'm going to get the CC and I know that he's going to call me. So what's going to happen when I call him the first time? I'm going to be like, hey, Britt, I've got a referral for you. It's Bob and Jane. I know. I'm Appreciate the comment. All that great. By the way, they need this, 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 and that. If you wanted to catch up, we can, but otherwise you're good to go. Thank you, because they're busy and efficient too. Once that trust equity is established, they'll skip the steps. Don't skip them until they do it. I know I said that again, but it's because it's important. It's their job to tell you when you have met the trust quotient, not ours. These steps will get you there as quick as anything I have ever experienced, but it's important that you follow the steps consistently, because that's what tells them very, very quickly, this person is different. This person is professional. This person is proactive. This person is, values me and I'm on the team. Like, that's the relationship everybody wants and very few people get. So step three is that participation. You're actually going to have an engagement with them. If they want to do it by email, that's okay. I love Loom. I don't know if Adam's on, right? He's heard this so many times. I was like, you don't even have to do this one, but like a Loom video to be like, hey, thanks so much for the referral. I'd love to get your insight. If we could do a quick chat, that'd be great. If you're busy, I'd still like, here's some questions. I'm always going to shoot for the personal interaction first, because again, it's not about the referral. What's it about? It's about reinforcing that trust equity and that feel good experience. So that this is huge. Even if the referral says no, they still feel great about you. We're going to talk about how you reinforce that in step five. If you skip step three, it's harder, which is why I'm telling you that now. When you say, I need you, you're an important part of the equation, validation, acknowledgement, recognition, right? Just all the good stuff. And then to Andrew's point, you're actually getting really valuable information for you, for the client, and for the relationship. So, right, you know how to apply that information. When you have that participation, Andrew, if I'm sitting on the bleachers and I'm like, go Andrew, I want him to win, right? Go Andrew. But if Andrew's like, hey, Steph, do you want to pick up the ball? You want to hang with us a bit? And then I get on the field, even if I'm awful at it, by the way, what do I want more than anything? I know we've got some sports fans. What do we want? We want to win. We want to hit the end zone. We want the pause, right? We want the high five. What's the high five in the case of a referral? It's usually a yes, or them feeling really great about the no. And that is just as good a win as we've talked about. So step three is to make sure that you get them on the field and you let them know that their insights and information matter, because they do. So you're trying to extract that at this stage. Step four, easy breezy. That's your prospect meeting. Andrew, Britton, Angela, you sit down. Julie, right? We go through the prospect process. Go see that lesson. Super structured. In that prospect meeting, you're doing all of those things that seed the story, but someone's going to make a decision in that meeting. And there are always three options. Does anybody know what they are? You've done this a while. What are the three options at the end of every prospect meeting?
Yes, no, or maybe.
No. Yes, no, or maybe. I love maybe. Maybe's awesome, right? No, we don't love maybe. Maybe, by the way, is the death toll of a referral if you don't tackle it proactively, which is what this process does. So I have a couple of rules of thumb around referrals. They are reliable as the day is long. You're welcome to challenge them or question them, but they will serve you, and they're simple. Here's the rule. He or she who tells is swell, and he who doesn't is to blame. He who tells is swell, and he who doesn't is to blame. Once you have the meeting with the prospect, this is like a hard and fast rule in the roadmap process. Within 24 hours, I call it the AMPM rule at the best practice level. If you meet with that prospect in the morning, AM, you must update the referral source by that afternoon, evening, the PM. If you meet with them, Britton, in the PM, afternoon or evening, you must update them by the following morning. Why? Because he who tells is well and he who doesn't is blamed. How many of you have ever gotten a referral? You thought it was a great fit and then they didn't hire you. And it was probably because they didn't want to pay your fee. Right? Like, you're all nodding. Is that going to get you more referrals? No. Why? Because what's going to happen, Julie, is that that referee is either going to talk to their accountant, attorney, et cetera, or their friend. And what's going to happen in that conversation? Someone made a referral and like, hey, what happened? Oh, I didn't hire her. Why? you cannot win in that scenario in any case. Oh, she was great, but the fees were more than I wanted. Code, too expensive. Oh, don't send our friends to expensive jewelry anymore. Bad idea. Don't send clients to expensive jewelry anymore. Oh, she wasn't this or she wasn't that. Ooh, bad juju. Don't do that anymore. Trust equity gone instantaneously. Now, I'm not saying everyone who's ever referred once and not again is in that camp. I'm saying, look at that list hard. How did that referral go? Did you do anything similar to this process? And again, it maybe the lead just went cold. And you, again, can resurrect that with the things we do to generate those client referrals. And then once you follow this process, you'll find that they flow from those folks a lot easier. They start telling people about Julie's awesome. You're going to blah, blah. I already told her. I hear this so many thousands of times. I can't even like, I already told her all about you. Hey, blah, I know. And they'll call Julie and be like, oh yeah, my CPA said that he told you all about us. Send you our tax returns, blah, blah, blah. Like it just becomes a really effortless experience for everyone involved because everybody's playing on the same team. He who tells this well, he who doesn't is to blame. If that prospect goes back to their referral source, client or center of influence, and says they didn't hire you, it's your fault. Only because you're not there to defend yourself. And they're never going to say, it was my fault. I was cheap. Jane and I couldn't agree on a decision. We really liked Julie, but we thought she was cheap. Like, there's no way they're going to own that. We just couldn't make up our minds. You're going to get the blame. You don't want to be the fall guy. If you call the referral source, Paul, and you say, John, I really, again, I just want to start, met with Jane and Jack. They were delightful people. Spent 90 minutes going through, right? Get specific. I'm awesome. I add value, right? No fluffy over here. We talked about, right, what they would need to put a plan together that's simple and addresses their taxes and their retirement, their X, Y, or Z. I felt like we had a good vibe. They really enjoyed the meeting. You know, they were engaged. And I know, you know, when we left the meeting, they wanted some time to think about it. You know, having done this, like my sense is that maybe they weren't entirely on, but they were really trying to understand the fee. I don't think, you know, hiring a professional advisor is something they've done before. And so I just wanted to share that with you. Of course, I agree, you know, that the reasons that you sent them, validation, were great reasons. I made sure that I gave them information and advice that would help them, whether they chose to work with me or not. Validation, I'm awesome, right? I'm here to help. And I think there's probably, my sense is there might be some sensitivity around the fee. I did my best to communicate that. As you know, sometimes it's hard to do that. It, you know, if you have conversations with them, I hope that you'll reinforce that, you know, our fees aren't the least expensive. They're not the most expensive, but they're pretty fair for the value that we deliver and that you think it's a good idea if you still do. If it changes, right, of course, we understand. Here's what I did do for them, right? In spite of the fact they still said, no, I'm still awesome guy or gal. I shared with them X, right? So just a quick summary, but you're basically saying I handled this like a pro in spite of the outcome. The yes or no doesn't matter anymore. If I say, hey, I felt like they were really engaged until the fee came up, candid conversation. And then I did sort of notice them pull back a little bit. The honest answer is, right, as you know, our fees aren't the least expensive and they're not the most. And sometimes people are prepared for that and sometimes they're not. I just want to let you know, I did my best to communicate the value. There might be some fee sensitivity there. If there's anything I can do or anything you learn, please let me know. Is that a conversation that you feel like you could have? God, I would respect the hell out of the person that had that conversation with me. Hey, you know what? It was, you're right, that you were spot on. They had real needs. And I want to be honest with you. I don't know if you've had this experience, but in the meeting, I could not get Jane and John to really agree on it. Really, there's some conflict around money, and I'm just not sure that they're ready for this level of relationship. I did my best to communicate the value and quote them a fee that I felt was really fair. And they're, you know, my best sense is they're on the maybe fence. I'm just not sure if they're ready. Doesn't mean that you weren't right about their needs, by the way. And I agree, they have, right? Go back to that. I added value. I did some stuff. And if there's anything I can do to support them making the right decision for them, please let me know. I really appreciate the referral, the confidence, and I want to make sure they get the help they need, whatever that might be. Could you have that conversation? Absolutely, you should be able to have that conversation. So what I'm really trying to articulate is you should be able to have any conversation, just have it quickly. Be the first person to have it because you're framing the lens through which they view the interaction for which they were not present. If Andrew does that in a prompt and professional and courteous and thoughtful, inclusive, partnering way, what am I likely to think about Andrew's position? That it's reasonable. And when the client, this is the fun part, I can't tell you how many times this has happened and it just makes me giggle. Then the prospect, their client or friend talks to them and says, "Well, I met with Andrew. It was great, you know, but oh my God, he wanted $7,500 for a financial plan." Is the person hearing that going to sit there and be like, "Oh my God, Andrew is such a crook. How could he do that?" No, because what have we already covered? Andrew's position on the outcome of the meeting. "Hey, I feel like fees might be an issue. You know, our fees aren't the least expensive or the most expensive, but our clients think they're fair." If the person making the referral in that moment doesn't stop and go, "Actually, Andrew, I think your fees are unfair," they are implying with all consent that they agree with you, which means that when the prospect says $7,500, with that wordsmithing, we're seeding the conversation. "Hey, you know, our fees aren't the least expensive. You know, they're not the most, they're fair. Pick your own wordsmithing." That's what I used. I still like it. When they talk to the prospect, AKA their client, Andrew, what are they likely to say? Maybe things like, "Yeah, I understand $7,500 is a lot of money. I've worked with Andrew on a number of referrals. And what I can tell you about his fees is they're not the least expensive." And they're like, whatever you communicate to them has a high probability of being repeated, because coming up with your own language around fees is scary, or experience, or anything else. So your job is to stake that position. If you don't know why they said maybe or no, own that. "Hey, you know, I felt like it was a good meeting, or I felt like the meeting was off, or I felt like maybe this one of them was really invested and the other wasn't." Like, be honest, there's no downside. You want to acknowledge the value of the referral, the rightness of it. "Hey, you were right. They had some needs. I'm not sure they're ready. I'm not sure they understand the value that we deliver for our fees. I'm not sure if there's agreement between them," right? Where is the decision making and the blame not sitting in that case? It's not sitting with Julie. It's not sitting with Britton. It's not sitting with Andrew. It's way over there. And by the way, I've never shamed them, and I have never done it in a way that in any way diminishes the prospect. That would make you look really bad. And I do it in a way that lets them leave with their dignity intact. They just weren't ready. They weren't, they just didn't have this really, they didn't have this kind of relation, you know, value-based relationship before. I'm not saying they're cheap. I'm just saying they haven't had an experience with this kind of deep, right, trusted advisor, value-based relationship. And, you know, if you have any input for how I can do a better job of sharing that with people, I would love to hear it. I'll keep trying. It creates space for an utterly candid conversation, which again, reinforces trust equity. It makes sure that responsibility for the outcome, the part that you can control, the experience, rests with you, and you get credit for doing that. And the part of the experience in terms of the result that rests with the other party, you cannot control their decision, is not how you are judged when it comes to making more referrals. The referral source's experience, good or bad, is no longer tied to the referral saying yes or no, which is what most processes are tied to. I can't tell you the number of advisors that have said to me, "Well, I send a thank you gift when they make a referral, and when the referral says yes, and I don't send anything when they say no." And I'm like, "Oh, so you're basically saying I only appreciate your confidence when I get it right, but when I mess it up and they say no, I'm not as grateful." Like, no. And no one's doing that intentionally, by the way. So if you've done that, don't take that personally. That's not what it's about. It's about acknowledging what really drives behavior, mindset, and then what are the steps and process methods that you can use to just very thoughtfully and intentionally take a few steps, very simple steps, to set the relationship in a way that it's anchored in trust equity from the onset. It separates you and differentiates you from any other advisor, unless they have coached me with me, because no one talks about what to do after. I haven't seen it. Someone probably does. I've never seen it. And to me, it's 50% of the equation, because if you mess this up, those referrals drop off the cliff and you don't get any more, and you've got to go start all over. So go to those client lists, go to the referral list, and look at the number of clients and centers of influence that have referred once and not again, and understand that you've got to kind of reseed those relationships. And for the ones that have referred multiple times, right, you want to make sure that as more referrals come in, anything you can to incite those is great. But as they come in, you really want to make sure that you apply this process, whether it's the 3 steps or the 5 steps. Step 5, which should not be a surprise to you at this point, is I am following up, right? So I let them know what happened. I did the AMPM rule. And then ideally, if you want to send a thank you gift in this process, there are different places you can do that. It's not about the outcome, it's about the referral. My favorite thank you gift of all time, because it meets any most compliance rules, and I've never met anyone that doesn't like it. And there are 1,000 ideas. There's Go on Tribe. We've talked about it a bazillion times, but this is my all-time favorite. It's a winner every time. Sherry's Berries. Has anyone ever gotten Sherry's Berries for me? It is my go-to. If I ever mess up on anything, I send Sherry's Berries. And the cool part, if you have any like sense of fun in you, then you write the note like this. Thank you very much for the referral. Really appreciate the trust and confidence, right? It's sweet. Like, I cannot tell you. I use the berry thing every time. I'm revealing a secret. If you ever get a note from me and it's berries, it's going to have berries in it. I look for reasons to use berries. Why? People like it. It's sticky. It's fun. It sticks out. It says, hey, we're real people over. I don't know. It's just fun. Find your own little thing, whatever it is. You can have like anything really consistently works. I like Sherry's Berries for a couple of reasons. It's food. One, it's really easy to do online. It meets compliance rules, right? You get 6 berries for $25 or something. They come overnight, freeze dried. It's really awesome. They're delicious. Everybody always loves them. And then what happens, Julie, if I'm sending a referral to a thank you to a client or to a center of influence and I send it to their place of work? Maybe a little bit different these days. But for those people that still work in offices, what happens when you send food to an office?
Everybody around them sees them.
Thank you. Yes. And then what is the second thing that happens every single time?
They get acknowledgement again.
Where did it come from? Where did you get the berries?
Well, what did you do to get them?
I'm sharing them with you. They're from my financial planner. What? Why? I sent him a referral. What? Why? Because he's awesome. What? Now, I'm not saying that they're all going to become your clients. I don't care. We're building a brand here, people, which is that you as a financial advisor are talk aboutable. Now, if people are working from home, they're still going to love it, by the way. But it's really, I used to tell clients all the time, like, always send it to work on purpose. Don't send it home. The husband and the wife talking about it together is not nearly as cool as the wife or the husband standing around at the office going, oh yeah, I referred my best friend to my advisor and look what he sent me or she sent me. So it's about building that process, because as you can probably figure out, this can all be automated, right? Go to your CRM, implement the steps, receive referral, click button equals letter, letter prints out, handwritten note or email. If it's an email, you should change the letter on a regular basis so they don't get the same letter every time. If you write the handwritten note, doesn't matter if they get the same letter every time or if you're forwarding the email. So those are the 5 basic steps for centers of influence. When you implement this process, if you implement it as instructed and consistently, here's what happens. The vast majority of the time, I've never heard of it happening any other way, which is 1, people notice. My center of influence was like, something changed. What changed? How would you not notice what changed? Like, I started to involve you on purpose, but thanks for noticing, right? What else changed? Hey, now I'm engaged. I'm involved on an ongoing basis. If you're following these steps, what are you doing with that referral source on a regular basis during that prospect process? How many touches are there? And they're all positive. They're all professional. They're all simple and efficient. So no big at, right? So what's the positive reinforcement that happens every time through that process? So it's, oh, what changed? Wow, this feels really good. And what will happen through this process inevitably is you will get referrals that don't fit. Does anyone remember how much we love conversations about referrals that don't fit? One of my favorite conversations. Why? Honest answer, we messed up and we get to fix it. We're not going to say it that way. We're going to say, hey, Jane, I really appreciate the referral of Andrew and Ann. Like, they're awesome people. I had a call with them. I can see the reason that you referred. They do have some planning and investment needs. And as I spent time with them, I realized I haven't done a good job of communicating with you about who I do my best work with. So I just wanted to take a couple of minutes to, one, reinforce and say thank you so much for the referral. I really get that it's an act of trust and confidence on your part. It is not something that you have to do. And I want you to know that every single time, this is in those details, by the way, that I'm going to do my very best to make sure that this interaction reflects well on you. Because, you know, everybody hates hearing that from their financial advisor partner. That's not what other advisors are doing, by the way. They're all trying to show up and look smart. Right? Your job is to make the referral source look smart. If you do that, they'll make you look smart and hireable if that fit is there. You won't have to do that work. So just don't make them do the heavy lifting. And so that's the goal, is to really create a process that says, I acknowledge you, I validate you, I involve you, I treat you like a co-partner in this process. And here's a process that you can follow, that you can expect me to follow reliably every single time. And you're going to get so used to that process that at some point you're going to figure out that it's the process and you're going to say, I trust you so much, we can skip all those steps and I can just tell you what I need to tell you and we can move on. And again, that might not happen with clients depending on the frequency of referrals, but with centers of influence, it absolutely will. And then it just gets easier and easier because the engagement comes as a function of the referrals, right? Michael's following up. He's saying, I met with the client. Here's what happened. Thanks again. Because when you call them and you say, here's what happened, assuming the no, we talked about that, right? He who tells us well, and so on. But Michael, what happens when they say yes, which they're going to do a lot of the time? We are in the end zone, like it's Super Bowl time, like the confetti's flying, go us, we did it. How do I know we did it? Because I was the first phone call that you made when it was over. You didn't wait 4 days or 4 weeks or 4 months to let me know. So without saying a word, you said, we're on the team, even though you can't be in the meeting with me, you're my partner in this. Even if that prospect says no, that level of acknowledgement, validation, and respect will not yield you anything but a better relationship with quality people every single time, faster and better than you can imagine. So if you don't get a high frequency referrals, it will obviously take a while for people to fill it. But a lot of you get, you know, a referral or two from a client. And this shift, or from particularly from centers of influence, because they're tuned into it so much in terms of what that relationship feels like, you're going to notice a pretty significant difference. If nothing else, you're going to feel better. They're going to feel better. And you're going to have a really quality process that you can follow in a very systematic way that says, I'm operating at the highest level of professionalism with my partners. And there's no downside to that. The upsides are that you will every time get a higher quality and quantity of referrals and opportunities to re-educate that referral source that says, I love talking with people. If I want to be your first phone call, friends, family, situations, happy to spend 15 or 20 minutes with people to see if we can help. Even if we're not, we're happy to provide directions, resources, et cetera, right? We always want to make sure that people have the access to the financial information they need to make informed choices, even if we can't work from them. That's just part of our mission around, like, right? So tell that story. So there's no downside to getting a bad referral. And I use bad's not the right word, right? A no fit referral, because it's an opportunity to go back. And if you do it through this process, it's going to be professional. It's going to be dignified. And it's going to be something that they're going to really appreciate and feel good about, which radically increases the likelihood that you actually get another shot at a referral versus just the straight no, and we thought Andrew was too expensive, right? Or we just didn't quite get it. Like, no one wants to refer into that kind of risk or that kind of void. So that's why we always want to come back and cover that positioning. So those are the five steps for centers of influence. The three step for clients are just much briefer because you're obviously not doing the participation call where you're going deep into their situation. You're going to call back or send that letter and say, hey, thanks, appreciate the referral. Can you tell me how you know Jane and Jack? And then the client, right, will share whatever they share. But you're not going to probe the way that you might, right, with someone's CPA or attorney, just given the nature and the delicacy of that relationship. And then you're going to take that step around follow-up, in this case, appreciation, going back to the berries or whatever it is. It's just a quick something that says, I acknowledge and validate and appreciate that you've done this. So there's an entire guidebook on this process. You can go deeper into the details, but literally it is those five steps. I think the resources include the guidebook and a three-step form and a five-step form. I don't know that there's a simpler process to follow. Here are the questions I get every time. So I'm just going to answer them and then we can open it up for questions because I'm sure you guys have some and I'd love to talk through it. One, can I skip some of the steps? I'm busy and I don't have time for all five. Can I skip some of the steps? Legitimate question, I get it every time. What is the answer? No, you can, but it's sort of like someone saying, can you manage my financial plan without managing all my assets? I can, but only if you don't want my best outcome. So you can do four steps out of five, but only if you don't want the best outcome. They are quick steps. None of them should take you more than a few minutes. Like literally 5 minutes, especially when you automate it, it's a click of a button. And the only part that takes real time is the human interaction where you're writing that email or in particular engaging in that participation call or that follow-up call. And that is time that you absolutely always want to invest when you're talking about those referral relationships. So with the three-step process, there aren't very many steps to skip, right? You want to acknowledge it, you want to follow up, and you want to do some form of appreciation. You can change what it is. You don't have to send berries every time. It can be a note, it can be a thank you, it can be client experiences. It's about having an intentional process that you standardize and systematize so you don't have to think about it, so that level of attention and care and quality show up every single time without fail, so that you're focused on the experience and helping them to want to create more of them through more referrals. So I will pause there and let's see what questions you guys have. Are there questions in Slido, Allison, or should I just drop into the chat?
Yeah, Terry had a question. What are your thoughts when a referral COI, other professional, asks for a referral fee?
It's a great question. Terry, are you there? Do you want to
unmute? Yep. No, this just came up recently and I was really taken aback by it. You know, I've been in the industry over 20 years. Never once did a referral source say, oh, I have this, and I'll preface it by, this is an attorney that's in my building. Uh-huh. And we had a conversation prior to COVID about, you know, working together. I wanted to introduce myself, tell them what my specialties were. This is a divorce attorney and my focus is on, you know, Gen X women that are going through transitions. So nice fit. So he reached out to me and he said, I have this very sensitive case and I really feel like you would be awesome at helping them. And he gave me, you know, told me what the situation was. And I said, no, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what I specialize in. So then he said, well, you know, we normally ask for a referral fee. And I said, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I'd have to check with my compliance consultant. Yep. I don't think it's something that I'm allowed to do in my industry.
Have they done referrals? Like, do they understand the solicitor relationship and that construct?
I don't know, because they used to have a financial advisor in their office who was basically like a quasi employee. And they would give, you know, business back and forth to each other. And this is what was interesting. They had this person in there and they realized he wasn't doing a good job. And then their clients started to complain. So they got rid of him.
And now they want to charge the client for access to a quality referral. That's total value, right? Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So I was, you know, I'm taken aback by it. I have not, you know, that's how I left it with them. But they did introduce me to the client. I did have a meeting with the attorney and the client together. And the client seemed very happy with me. She's supposed to be coming into a very large settlement sometime next month. And I'm just, you know, going to play it out and see what happens. But I just wanted to know your thoughts on pay to play. Basically, that's how I see it.
Yeah, no, it is. There's no question. And there are different models. So, right, you know, in the old school days, that never, ever happened. And what I'll tell you is, right, those referral or solicitor relationships with centers of influence, in particular accountants, are very, very popular. And I haven't seen it as much in terms of, right, asset protection attorneys, divorce attorneys, and estate planning attorneys asking for those referral fees in general, because there's not usually the same stream of clients. So when my experience is, those referral and revenue share relationships tend to kick in when you see a consistent stream of referrals. Think about your custodial relationships, right? The Fidelities, the Schwabs, they take a pretty significant, but the trade-off for that is a steady stream of referrals. When you think about an accounting relationship, when someone has clients and they're referring them consistently, it can make sense economically, right? If that's your marketing engine versus time, energy, and capital, that can be, right, a really valuable marketing investment. What you're talking about here is sort of a one-off relationship that isn't really defined. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if Tiffany were on this call, she would really, this great session in the COI campaign that we give every year, and she took it like to the next level, where she really defines the relationship and the expectations. And I think this is an opportunity to very much do that and say, hey, I appreciate that you might be looking for a referral relationship. I'm not sure if, just given that you had someone in-house, that how much you guys understand about the dynamics of referral relationships in our space with compliance and assets, for example. Typically there's a solicitor relationship, right? That requires like licensing and things on your end. Is that something that you've explored before? And again, they might get referrals from mortgage brokers and other things where there's a different scenario. So I always want to level set to what's their expectation and why is that their expectation? So I would go back to this with, hey, I've been thinking about our conversation. I want to be really upfront. This is not something that I've experienced before. And it's something that I'm happy to have a conversation about if you feel like there's a steady stream of clients that would sort of warrant a referral relationship. You know, can you tell me about the kind of referral relationships that you have currently? Our profession has some very specific things that I don't know if you guys know about. So I just wanted to understand, oh yeah, we refer to the mortgage broker. Okay, that's a little bit different. Let me explain why. So there are other ways that you can add value. Reciprocal relationships, which doesn't always work, by the way. When I work with practices and we build out those relationships deeply, we, like when we do like CE courses or even just the marketing, we put together all the value that's going to come their way. If I'm an accountant and I'm doing high net worth work and I'm doing an ILIT or I'm doing NIMCRETS, like there's tax and accounting work that gets done with all of that. There's a ton of work that gets done in the estate planning world as a function. Like, hey, these are the kinds of things that we end up when you make referrals, these are the kinds of things that we do. And, right, these are the kinds of things that I'm going to want to be able to refer clients back to you about. Can we talk about some of those things so I can, and what you're basically saying is, let's talk about how I can deliver value to you in other ways. So step one is, with your compliance consultant, are you in a position to do a referral relationship outside of an actual solicitor relationship and, right, licensing and things? If not, that's a non-starter. Two, do you want to do a referral relationship, right? And my experience is, if there's a steady stream of referrals, if they really can deliver that consistently, it might be a really good marketing arm versus going off and spending time and capital in other places. If they're like, oh, you know, hey, once in a while, you might just want to have the honest conversation that says, look, I can totally appreciate that. That's not kind of how I manage my business. I always want to focus on delivering value to the clients. Here's the way that I can add value back. I'm going to refer them back for this kind of work. I'm going to do great work and make you look really good. If I have opportunities in the estate planning world, I'm of course going to, right? So, and then if there's not a fit and that's kind of your value position, then there's not a fit and you want to find someone where it is. So I would kind of get level set on where they are and why they're there, what that means to you and your marketing strategy. And then if you want to engage in a relationship more broadly, then we can have a great conversation about what's the structure, what's the comp, what are the expectations, how do you manage that, who's doing what as part of that relationship. And then you build a really nice pipeline between you, and that can be a great growth engine.
Thank you.
Does that help? Is anyone else doing that just outside of an ongoing solicitor revenue share with other professionals where they're just playing a flat referral fee? there are more of you than me. So maybe I haven't had that experience a lot. So it either tells me that they don't understand just kind of the revenue dynamics, or they were doing something very interesting with that other advisor.
Hey, Stephanie?
Yes, sir.
Peter. Yeah, through Ameriprise, we can give referrals. There are certain categories that are allowed, and you have to set it up, and it can be a few hundred dollars if you want to. Yep. But you have to get the relationship approved.
Yeah. And I don't know what your, I'd love to hear Peter's experience on this. How many of you think it's worth all that trouble to make $200 or $300 if you're an estate planning attorney? Like, so when I think about the caliber of when I think about value alignment and those deep relationships where you really sink in that referral source, that attorney or that accountant, they're just like, you all have them. It's seamless and it really works. Sometimes when you have to like do that extra work and they're trying to make things fit for that extra $300 or they're wanting $3,000, like that's the piece where you have to ask yourself, does it really fit with kind of how I'm trying to grow? And is it a one-off exception? Notice what I did in that case with Teresa was I asked myself, could it be a growth engine? If it's a one-off exception for 300 or 3000, that's not necessarily worth it. If there's going to be an engine, right, a steady stream of those referrals, then it might be looking at, whoop, can't talk today. Need my water. My mouth gets dry. I'm going to talk for hours on it. Then it might be worth looking at building a bigger engine around that. Right. So if Teresa figured out a way to make that work with one attorney and it really worked, and that was part of her growth strategy, we'd want to replicate that model with attorney 2, 3, and 4. So Teresa, it sounds like you have a little bit of homework to do. Do you want to keep us posted?
I will keep you posted. I do. I think it was just, I was so taken by surprise because I've never been, it's a referral. We know you're going to help our very sensitive need client, but by the way, we want a fee for it. Yeah. So
does anybody here, just show of absolute honesty, does anybody here feel really awesome about that? Right. So to my point, like, that's just a, hey, help me understand. They might just not know. Like, they just might not have ever done this. And that just might be what happens with the mortgage broker and the gardeners or the interior designers, because in those businesses and those professions, it very much can work that way. Mm-hmm. Or it could be that someone's trying to squeeze $300 or $3,000, right, out of a client referral, and that's not the values alignment that you're looking for.
No, it's definitely not the values alignment I'm looking for.
Jeffrey, do you have a question?
Yeah, I was just going to say, we did a lot of this with CPAs, right, like a lot of people do, where we actually licensed the group that owns the building we're in. And so I come from a family of attorneys. So I looked into it for the attorneys and we can do it, but the issue's on the bar side. So if we try to offer that 65 referral partnership, it's fine for us to try to get them a 65, but most bars don't allow. I think DC was like the only one that'll allow its attorneys to participate with non-attorneys in another business. So it's, look at it from the bar side in your state, that's going to be where the issue is, I think.
It outside of licensing, it breaks down because they're, yeah, from a professional designation. Again, the mortgage brokers, et cetera, are a little bit different, but when you're like accountants, attorneys, et cetera, there are some pretty specific requirements. And then depending on if you're right an RIA or with a BD, then it gets stricter still. And Julie had a great comment, and I think this is really hopefully kind of the heart of the conversation behind the process, aside from the behavioral, right, validation, acknowledgement, get that part right, is it's about education. You're educating them about the shared client, right, as you go through that process together. That's collaborative, that's the partner approach, right, but it's mutual education as you go. You're bringing them up to speed and keeping them on the track with you. And when it's not a fit, that follow-up call is powerful because you're saying all the right things, right? Appreciate the trust and confidence. You were right that they had some needs. And I realize, where am I taking ownership of the miss? Notice you'll never hear me put that on the other side. Even if I've told them, I won't put it on the other side. It's, I realize I might not have done a good enough job of communicating who we do our best work with. And then if you've made, like, if that's been a shift, just like with COVID, we kind of made some shifts and just really haven't you know, communicated them from a marketing perspective broadly, I thought this would be a good opportunity to catch up with you and bring you up to speed. Okay. Anytime you're narrowing your niche in a conversation, that client or referral source isn't going to be like, oh, don't do that. I'm going to send you people that don't fit, right? It's a naturally narrowing filter that they're going to carry away, which is why we still like to add that. I call it the first phone call conversation. Hey, we really do our best work with divorcees who are, right, coming out of, right, a complicated financial situation with international assets, like whatever, pick, right, pick your niche. And we still always want, because we believe in, right, the value of financial planning, and we know not everybody has access to a resource like you do, we still always want to be here to be first phone call, friends, family, blah, blah, blah. Right. And you can always afford to spend 10 or 15 minutes on the phone with somebody, getting some insight and pointing them in the right direction at, right, going back to those other conversations. And no one loses in that scenario. If you are overwhelmed with not fit referrals, call me. We will sort it out. But in 30 years, I've never had that problem. So this is a process that just makes it clear and simple that you're operating in a reliable, results-oriented, relationship-oriented way. And those, if we think about the underpinnings of trust equity in referral relationships, that's what people want. They want reliable. They want to know what they're sending people into, which we talk a lot about on the generating referrals, really communicating that story on the front end. So they're not going into a black hole. But your job is, once they part the curtain, once you part the curtain and invite them in, your job is to not close the curtain on them and leave them guessing. Your job is to keep the curtain wide open and say, it's act one. Thank you. It's act two. I'm acknowledging you. It's act three. I am participating with you. It's act four. I'm meeting with the prospect and following up. It's act five, right? I'm acknowledging you. So that everybody knows what's happening every step of the way, because that's where that reliability, the result, again, it's not about the result per se, it's about the result of the experience. I feel good about that level of professionalism and proactivity and partnership. No downside there. And then in the end, you're ultimately going to be able to know that you've done great work for the client or potential client, for the referral source. And ultimately, all of that layers into that third R, which is the relationship, the partnership piece. When a referral source feels positive, when they know that you're reliable, when they feel like the result's going to be good, no matter, in our model, doesn't matter what the result is, doesn't matter if they fit, doesn't matter if they don't fit, and that it's relationship-based. And all that partnership and involvement is essentially what's creating that, the acknowledgement, the recognition. And when you follow those five steps, or the skinny down three steps, the person on the other side of the fence is going to feel more acknowledged, more valued, and much more likely to want to repeat that behavior because it serves them, not in the right selfish way, but in the good selfish way, which is, I feel really good creating that experience. The other parties involved, right, felt great. And I feel good about the way that Jeff or Pete or Julie showed up in that experience, independent of the outcome. And the next time that an opportunity presents itself, am I more likely or less likely to make that referral?
Stephanie, he has a question as well.
Yeah, hands down, I'm going to make it every time. Am I more likely or less likely to feel better about making it, to be more engaged and involved and like, oh, you've got to talk to Jeff. He's a great guy, right? He's going to take, like, they're going to do that work for you because they're on the team and they want to help you move that ball down the field. All right. Do you want me to answer the one from Betty Allison, or is there one in Slido? You want me to take
Let's do Felicity first and then Betty.
Okay.
I had a quick question, and that is, recognizing we haven't done this particularly well in the past.
So cool. Felicity, what time, backwards is it there? What time is it there right now?
4:20 a.m.
I was up early too. All right. I always love watching Felicity because she's always so smiley, and I know how early it is where she is.
But just slightly.
It's like it's 4:20 here.
Yeah. So the people that you haven't done this well for in the past, would you recommend going back and kind of saying to them, you know, I thanks very much, we didn't thank you, or do you just let that go and start afresh?
Yeah, so the downside here is it's really challenging to go back and say, hey, I messed up referrals. So you can say, hey, I haven't done a good job of educating you. It's really hard to be like, hey, you made a referral 3 years ago and I botched it. So it just is what it is, and that's okay. Here's the good news. You're, for the most part, not doing any worse than anyone else, truly, because this is the norm. And what you do want to focus on. So the reason that I focus on this earlier in the year, because it does drive growth, but it's a simple, efficient, low-lying fruit, right? Like any of you can implement this in 15 minutes if you don't even put it in your tech, if you print out the form and just fill out a form for every prospect, right? And look at that once a week, like daily, actually, because of the AM/PM rule, right? You can't mess that up. It's a very quick and easy way to implement and drive more referrals on the back end. But very much to your point, Felicity, you still want to do the work of re-educating around the client on the front end. So that will typically happen when you get really clear on your business model and niche, like who are the clients you're going to do your best work with. If you're not getting any more specific, you don't need to go back and have a more specific conversation. You need to, right, do the things that we talk about to just generate referrals, right? That trust equity. And then as you get them, let this process kick in and it will kind of pull it up to level, if you will, because like people realize very quickly that it's a good process. But you'll want to go back to the generating referrals lesson and really think through how to go and the COI campaign. How do you go back to those COIs and basically start a campaign that says, so there's some reason for the campaign. I have a new niche. I have a new brand. I have a fun website / value proposition. I've increased my minimums. I've just decided I need to go back. Like, hey, as we focus on, like literally the story is always really simple, especially right now. Hey, we've been getting a lot of referrals post-COVID. The demand for advice is on the rise. And as we get a lot of these phone calls, I realize that while we can help most of them, that we're not best suited to work with all of them. And as I was going down the list, I realized that you've been gracious enough to make a number of referrals over the years. And so I just wanted to do the courtesy of reaching out and see if we could catch up so I could talk a little bit about kind of where we're focusing going forward, the clients that I'd love to keep partnering with you on. Like you can always frame the go back conversation. You're looking for some reason. COVID is a really good reason at this point. Hey, we've been really focusing a lot more on referrals, given that right people's interest in planning seems to be so high post. Like once you find that reason, then you basically begin your COI campaign, Felicity. And it's a really good, like if you go back to that lesson, it's a really structured model. You don't have to wait till September. It's in the library and it really lays out like step one, nail the story. What is the story and the value proposition and the client that you're taking to them? Two, right? Think of the five-step process for referrals as a very similar model of the COI process, which is you're going to identify the COIs, you're going to build a campaign around them, and you're going to build that relationship results partner-based approach from a marketing, like you're building trust equity on the front end. Here, what we're doing is we're reinforcing and rewarding trust equity.
Excellent. Thanks.
You're welcome. Does that help?
Yeah, very much.
Great. All right. Sarah, I'm glad that you like the content. That's awesome. Allison, and I have any more questions? I'm sorry. Slido closed.
We had a question from Betty. Let's see. How do you approach referrals from other financial advisors, a mix of COI client referral process?
So Betty, is that like Elizabeth is referring a client to you, and then how do we handle that?
Yeah, I tend to get referrals from financial advisors who have higher minimums than me. And I just, we can't obviously share certain information, and I'm just wondering how you would approach it.
So one, the exact same way, except with respect to the client referral, if they, like you have to get that acknowledgement from the client. So if they say, so that's just a teaching and training process with them. So one, I would follow the process exactly the same, right? Acknowledge. In your case, you might want to do some kind of, I think to Teresa's question, it was Felicity's, like you might want to do a level set to just say, hey, you know, we've been receiving a lot of referrals recently. And I realized as I reviewed the list that you guys are responsible for a good number of them. And I just wanted to take the time to say, Thank you. I really appreciate, you know, I know that you guys have a lot of advisors that you could refer your smaller clients to, and it means an awful lot to me that of the choices that you have, that you place your confidence in me. And I want you to know that even though these are your ideal clients, I will always do everything I can to reinforce your relationship and the value of the referral and to refer back to you, right? Clients that do your minimums. And then you're just, as referrals come in, you're following the process. Thank you very much. Like they're going to get to that process too. Like they're just going to know like, oh, it's Betty. We're sending a referral. We're going to get a letter and they'll be fine with that. Or they will say to you, Betty, we love you so much. You can stop sending the letters now. We get it. What you do want to do is have a conversation with them to the extent that you can about when they make a referral, anything you can do to kind of open up the conversation in terms of the client dialogue. Like, hey, if there's any way that when you're talking with a prospect, if you'd be comfortable saying, hey, would it be okay if we could make this referral to Betty? Would it be all right with you if we shared the information with her that you shared with us to make your time with her more meaningful? So anytime you can, my experience is anytime you concede to another human being what to say in a situation, they will not say it the exact same way, right? Because we all have our own translators, but there is a very high probability that they will say something generally like what you say, because in the moment, when their brain goes searching for something, is it going to want to create something new, Betty? Or is it going to be like, what was that thing Betty said? That sounded pretty good when she said it. Yeah, let's say something like that. So Betty, for you and Felicity, I think for you too, like it's in anyone who wants to go back is what is the position on which you're coming back to resurrect the conversation? So when you think about the R's at the beginning of the presentation, we talked about recognizing, reinforcing, and rewarding. And so in advance of that, it's really kind of realizing that, I'm trying to think about where I was going with that, realizing that relationship in a way that you can communicate that, Betty. So it's just follow the basic, it's follow that same process. But if you're going back to what's the word, revitalize, re-energize, relaunch, pick a word, right? If you're doing that, if you've got a steady stream of referrals, you pick up with everything we've talked about. If you're trying to reset that relationship, then you're going to find the reframe. Hey, we've gotten a lot of referrals with COVID. Hey, I've realized, you know, a lot of our referrals have been women going through divorce. So we've made a decision to focus there. I just wanted to talk with you a little bit about what those changes and what they mean to our referrals, you know, and how we're going to continue to help people that don't fit that kind of client profile. Like, what is the position that you want to share if you're trying to reboot? That's the word I'm looking for. That really works. If you want to reboot that relationship in advance of the referral process, you're going to want to find that reboot position and or just follow the client referral strategies to generate referrals from clients or centers of influence. And then you definitely want to use this process. Once that referral's been triggered, the first thing you do is your referral roadmap. And then you just follow the process from there and it takes care of itself. So was this helpful today? I try to layer in some of these just coaching practice management conversations that I think you guys can use pretty easily that are accretive to growth and your relationships in ways that don't require a ton of time and energy. So hopefully this is one that you'll take and you'll use because it has really positive ROI in terms of time, energy, and referrals. All right. And with that, I believe that I'm 1 minute over. So I'm still, I think I get a 3 minute window. Do I get like a 3 minute window? I feel like I get a 3 minute window. All right. With that, if you guys have any other questions around this, feel free to drop them on Tribe and or bring them to office hours as you start to use it. But hopefully this will help give you a reliable roadmap that you can follow when you get referrals so that you can get the relationships and the results that you want. With that, you guys have a great day and a great week.